America, and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am your host, the most Brandon Perkins. Joining you as always is Filippo Donolfo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Logi. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Yo.
Hello.
Yeah, so this week we got another bit of the Trump dump for you. Because
it's a big one.
Yeah. Dumb shit still happened. Yeah. And you got to talk about it because, God, how I wish I could just climb into a cave somewhere and just stay there until November 2020. But
yeah, and we don't even have the Huawei to the danger zone on here yet. So
nope. But yeah, so we also got some big political news out of the UK involving their current prime minister. Soon to be ex-prime minister. We'll be explaining that. Also, the measles are making a big comeback. And not in a good way. Which I don't know how you could say that.
Yeah, I was about to, you know.
Yeah, and you can pretty much guess who the culprits are for why. But, oh, yeah, and we got some movie news, including news about Sonic the Hedgehog, that a portion of a movie. also, we got news about the live-action Akira movie. And even though John Wick 3 just recently came out, we've already got a date for John Wick 4.
They're just going to keep milking that one, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's... They finally found the one vehicle that, you know, outside of the Matrix that Keanu Reeves does well. Hmm. So, anyway, all that and more on this exciting edition of Let's Weekend. So, to start us off as always, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So, I started and finished Ancillary Mercy, the third and last in the Imperial Rouch series by Anne Leckie.
Yeah.
God damn, that book is weird.
But, well, the series in general is.
Yeah, it's weird, but it's also, like, incredibly well written. I love that in this world, like, gender is completely irrelevant. So
much so that the protagonist basically automatically assumes everyone is female, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I mean, the pronoun used is she, but it's not just her that uses it. Everybody does.
Yep.
So it's like, yeah, they just seem to have moved past that. So that's kind of it. That was kind of interesting.
It does make the book a little, I mean, it does make the series a little off-putting at first because you kind of have to get used to it.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell who's who after a while because it's implied afterwards within context, but... It's a little weird at first. And then when you get to the point in the third book when you realize that the Lord of the Ratch is at war with itself. Yeah, that's fun. Like, yeah, it's a strange book and it ends fairly well. Open enough that she could probably go elsewhere with that series if she wants to.
I think she is, actually.
Yeah.
So. There's a fourth book in that universe that's coming out. In the near future, I believe.
Cool. So,
and she also started a fantasy series, too.
Yeah,
so there's also that.
Which is on my to-read list.
Yeah. That first book basically sort of won, like, the sci-fi triple crown when it first came out.
It's like there were, like, a series of awards that year, and it won all of them.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
That was also the year that... You know, the so-called sad puppy started showing up.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a whole... Should we explain that very briefly, what that is? Because it was like a... Okay, so you know the Gamergate shit?
Yeah.
And the comic gate shit?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the sad puppies was basically that.
Mm. But for science fiction.
Yeah, there was a handful of really butthurt hacks who were convinced that their work... got better reception than the stuff that the Hugos and Nebulas were getting.
Mm.
So they started this, this sort of string of nominations they did called Sad Puppies. They also had like another one that was headed by Vox Day, and you don't want to know who that guy is. But he started a string called the Rabid Puppies, and they tried to get them, and basically that is the reason why the Three Body Problem ended up winning Best Novel a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was almost by complete accident. Not to say that the book doesn't deserve it, but, you know, it was just a bit, it pretty much burned itself out, and all the people behind it ended up looking like doofuses.
Yeah, which is how that usually ends up happening.
Yeah. By the way, as far as that Vox Day figure, he is literally the only person in the history of the Science Fiction Writers of America to have actually been kicked out of the organization.
Nice job.
Yeah. That's the type of individual we're talking about. But anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, everything else?
So it's been that. I've been going down some YouTube rabbit holes. I found a channel called by a guy named Matt McMuscles.
Mm-hmm.
And he does a series called What Happened?
Mm-hmm.
Which is basically...
What Happened?
Exactly. Which is basically exactly that. Goes through like some really disastrous game releases and, you know, outlines what the fuck led up to that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nicely researched. It's, you know, pretty witty. It's good stuff. Recently he started a series called Gone Too Soon. Mm-hmm. And the first episode of which was Bizarre Creations. So I ended up sending that link over to Pat. I'm not sure if you got around to watching that video yet.
I have not yet.
Yeah. So, I've reached out to him, and we'll see. Maybe we can get him on Day Zero Update at some point. So
mm-hmm.
he seems pretty cool. So there's been that. Apart from that, yesterday I upgraded Windows 10 to version 19.03, also known as the May update.
Mm-hmm.
So far, we're working good.
That's good.
Things seem a little snappier. I have noticed some very rather strange audio issues that have crept up now and then while watching video, so I'm not entirely sure what's going on there. I might have to get, you know, new audio drivers or something for this new version of Windows, but whatever. Because I know those didn't happen before I upgraded, and now they happen, so... Yeah, it's probably something to do with that, but I'll sort that out later. As long as Skype records fine, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be doing that. And that's really mostly it. I've just been getting ready for E3, and kind of excited there. It's going to be a very exciting year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how about you, Pat?
I'm just... sticking with my Final Fantasy XIV, my VR gaming for the time being, and otherwise going down the rabbit hole of holy shit, that was a giant info dump of Final Fantasy XIV info last night. And there's another one coming next week, so they're definitely getting the hype train started up for Shadowbringers, and oh my god. There's a lot to digest here, and it's only going to get more so next week. So,
when is that game launching?
The early access is at the end of June, and the official launch is July 2nd.
Okay.
So, if you pre-order, you get it like a week early, or so.
Hmm.
And so, the benchmark is out. I've been watching the benchmark trailer. Going over the live letter information and some other information that's gotten out.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting because they're making system-wide changes that affect Dark Knight in a very profound way. And yet for everything that Dark Knight is losing, you know they're not going to let it suck because it's the poster child of the expansion.
Mm.
So it'll be very interesting to see how they completely reinvent the job for the expansion with probably the most radical gameplay changes we've seen since the game relaunched in 2013.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah, that's been my week.
All right, Chris, what about you?
Weather-wise, this week has been fine. We're starting to get to the point where it's going to be in the 80s every day, which is not great.
Yeah, it's already in the 90s up here.
I mean, down there. But yeah, I think we got a bunch of storms coming up pretty soon. It's going to be fun to see how that all goes. I got back into The Flash because I got a notice from them that season 5 is on there.
Yep.
So I was like, well, I didn't finish season 4, so I went through that most of it yesterday. And so have you seen Heroes? Okay. You know Sylar, the main villain of the whole thing, where his whole thing is he gathers other people's powers, becomes this kind of crazy powerful being.
Yep.
The Flash got his own version of that kind of thing.
Oh, neat.
With a little bit of the Matrix in there, right at the end, which was weird. I don't know if it's a real character. It's somebody named DeVoe, who has kind of hinted at in previous seasons as like being somebody that other villains have talked about. As like somebody that was coming into the future, sort of thing. And then it sets up an interesting season 5. Not really going to spoil what happens, but it's pretty good. I'm looking forward to watching some more of it. Just got really kind of silly this season in a weird way. Especially when one of the characters is Elongated Man, who is all about making jokes and puns. Because that's how he deals with tough situations. But yeah, that's been pretty fun. The weird thing is when they do their crossover stuff, and I only see like one out of the four parts of this whole sequence, and I'm like, what the fuck is this about? And I don't see any setup or finale to that. It's like, oh, well, it's Christmas time. We're moving on. Yeah, I guess that did better.
Well, it does, but the other ones, like the other two parts of them, are in Supergirl and Arrow.
And Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's like, I'm not caught up on those at all, so I've missed out completely on the context of whatever's going on. But yeah, I know the Batwoman is going to be showing up whenever they do the crossover stuff in this season, so I'll be getting to that eventually. But there was one interesting, out there kind of episode where they go to one of the Earths where the Nazis took over the world.
Yep.
Which they found the doppelganger for Arrow, who was the leader of the Nazis. which led to an interesting bit where he decided to go dressed as the King of the Nazis or whatever the official title is. I think it's called Earth X's. Or no. I don't know. That might be the thing here. Let me see. Which, then they have like Nazis going through time. Or like the portals to other universes to try to fight them back. Yeah, that's what the whole crossover thing was about. Earth X. Nazi Earth, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much.
Was weird. And getting all in the context of like, wait, there's Nazis? Why is everybody trapped here? Then seeing who was it? It was I forget what his name is. I'm trying to see if I can find it real quick. But there's one of the characters you've seen before with Leonard Snart, who is Captain Cold, who is played by who is he played by? He's played by the guy who was in Prison Break, the younger brother.
Damn, I'm blanking.
And I'm trying to see if they have something listed here for. Let's see. I'm not sure what his name is, but yeah, that actor was pretty. And like in this whole Earth, he is gay, so he's gonna. He has a relationship with one of the leaders of the Resistance.
Oh.
Kind of thing. And I was like, oh, I don't know if that actor is gay, but that's interesting.
Yeah,
but yeah, that was pretty neat. and kind of getting ready to watch John Wick 3, maybe this weekend, maybe tomorrow, I don't know. I watched John Wick 2. I don't know exactly what's going on there, but the action was pretty good. Because like the whole, they start trying to add lore to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it kind of starts losing it a little bit. Because it's, John Wick gets a marker, which is something that when he's given it, he has to, you know, do a killing that he's with like no questions asked, sort of thing, and he refuses and has to sit down with like the leader of the assassins, I guess. Mm-hmm. He explains to him the seriousness of this, so he takes it on anyway. Does the killing, and then I guess other people have set contracts on him, so then he has to defend himself for the rest of the movie. It's like, okay, the action's good, but I don't know why exactly this all is going on. But he kills people in some crazy ways, and it's a neat movie. Look forward to see the third one. But yeah, also been playing some more Rocket League. We got the new week of challenges, so I've been working on some of that. Though I kind of stopped when I ran into a match where the other team was typing the N-word in the chat over and over again throughout the match. I have it all recorded. Initially, I didn't pay attention to it. Then I noticed a couple chats where it's like dot, dot, dot. S, and I was like, wait, what? I looked at the others, and they were trying to do versions of that word that are getting around the text filter.
Mm.
Like N-I-G-A-A-S, N-I-G-E-R-S, I don't know, but then they advertised that they have a Twitch that is like N-I-G-A-A-S.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is some fucked up shit. And made matters worse that they actually won.
Mm.
So that was not great, but I reported at least two of them that said it.
Mm-hmm.
The other one was just spouting off meme stuff.
Mm.
So like they're, you know, a real great group of guys.
Yeah.
I might put the recording of the whole match up on YouTube. Because why not?
Yeah,
and just point psionics at it. They'll figure it out.
I did send them screenshots of it on Twitter. They didn't really respond to it, so that was kind of the thing. I was like, oh, I think I'm done with this for today. I don't really feel like playing more of it. So I ended up getting Minecraft on the Switch because it was on sale. The first time they had any of the versions on sale. On the consoles at least. And I've been itching to play some more Minecraft. And so I got that. And it was kind of I played the Xbox One version, but I didn't think there was much new about it. At least that was noteworthy.
Mm-hmm.
But in the year or so since then, while playing this, I noticed a bunch of stuff. So the Switch version doesn't run that well. I've had times where it just hitches up for a few seconds. And to the point where I like stop doing anything, and I have to actively like try and do stuff to double check if it's not moving because I'm not moving or if it's still frozen, kind of thing. So it's a couple of issues like that happens, and I'm not sure if there are options for like FOV and rendering how many blocks ahead of you, that sort of thing, that I'm trying to mess with, but I'm not sure if that's going to actually fix anything. There's a lot of like neat things to it. So like the water is more transparent now. So like I can actually watch the sunrise through the water before it gets up to the horizon, which is neat. But also maybe that's why it runs poorly, because I can like see deeper into the water and see like the dolphins and all the new sorts of fish they have in the water now, as well as like octopus that are in there. And yeah, so the world I was in, well, the first one I died because I tried to jump from a mountain into the river and mess that up. And I couldn't find out where I left all my stuff. I was like, well, I'll just start over, and got into a new world. And which, like, the area I was in, well, first I found a village, so I, you know, looted a bunch of stuff from there, food and such, but I was playing on peaceful, so I don't really need food anyway, but ended up exploring some more of the map, because you start with the map initially, so I'm like, well, I'll go see what else is on this map, and I found a bunch of islands, like desert islands, so I was like, one of the things I've been wanting to make in Minecraft is like an underwater lair, essentially, and make like tunnels and all that sort of stuff. And it's like, oh, this would be a good excuse to like kind of hollow out one of these islands and start building that. That's kind of where I'm at right now. That's why I watched a bunch of The Flash, because I had that on while I was doing Minecraft stuff. So I could sort of follow along while doing something that's kind of mindless. And yeah, besides having to get used to the controls, because obviously compared to like the Xbox and PlayStation versions, A, B, X, Y are swapped. So pulling up the, or doing things like jumping is on a different button. It's on the right button instead of the bottom button. Stuff like that. You can swap them in the options, but then it just makes everything weird. Because I'm just used to playing like Mario games and all that with A is the jump button. So it's like, it's a little bit too much of a mind fuck. And then X and Y are kind of the same button now. Inventory and crafting is like what those are tied to. And he's like, you can do both from either one. And so it's like, why is this taking up two buttons? Because it doesn't really matter too much for which one you go to. Another thing I noticed, you can't pause in the game anymore. So if you pause and like while you're looking at like the sun rising, you can watch it go up. So you can't like actively stop the world.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, it's I'm not playing like an online game either.
Yeah.
I'm usually playing like an offline thing. And even like going into airplane mode, it does still keeps doing that. So it's like, all right, this is something that's not great. Change to it. But for the most part, everything else is fine. And I was playing with the, I was playing with one of the free texture packs, which is called like a more realistic texture pack, which means all the, I'm trying to figure out like what everything is early on. It's like, wait, is that dirt? That looks different. And not really, and but kind of just being too stubborn to change it back. So I'm starting to relearn like what the visual language of that, all the different materials are, especially finding new stuff and running to look at what the point of like some of the new materials are. But yeah, otherwise it's been pretty good. I did a stream of that on Thursday, kind of just trying to figure out how I'm going to lay out this whole area, which I'm starting to put all my glass down for like the bubble top part. I just got to keep mining up my glass, and I'm at the point where I'm now farming trees so I can make more charcoal to use in the furnace, which at some point I'm going to have to have like an underwater atrium for trees and gardening and stuff. But I'm going to have that be another place where I'm tunneling to.
Yeah. I just saw that if you want to actually pause that you're when you're playing an offline game, it's now the plus button.
Yeah, but that doesn't, that still doesn't do it.
It still doesn't do it.
It just brings up options.
Yeah.
Which weird. Is just weird. And also because the D-pad sucks, navigating the menus kind of sucks. for the settings, because it's one of those settings where you have on the left side is like the categories, and on the right side is the options.
Yeah.
So I accidentally sometimes when I'm just going down, it triggers the left, and so backs me out of the menu.
Hmm.
And I was like, God damn it, I gotta go back. Especially when you're like trying to mess with like FOV or some of that stuff, where it's like, oh, this is like at the bottom of the scrolling menu part. And so that's not great either.
Hmm.
But it is weird getting achievements out of this. Because I put my Minecraft, my Microsoft account in there.
Yeah.
So it's weird. Like when I go to like true achievements, it shows like Minecraft in parentheses Nintendo Switch version. It's like, oh yeah, that's a weird thing. Be able to look at that stuff on like an Xbox. That's pretty weird. But yeah. More streaming. I did Wargroove for our Sunday stream, which was pretty cool. That is the sort of Advance Wars style game, but with You're not really using military machines for that. It's kind of Fire Emblem style in terms of using troops, different types of troops,
yeah,
and all that. So it's kind of like more medieval level of technology. Besides the fact you have some magical stuff going on. But yeah, that was a lot of fun to play. And Tuesday I played some Slay the Spire, which is a fantastic card battling roguelite. And that stream was fun because I realized I kind of lucked into a deck that was kind of impossible to defeat, at least at the point I was at. Because it was essentially, so I was using the second character. You kind of unlock that stuff as you play more. I think there's three, so I have to keep playing with the one I'm doing right now is the Silent. And so your deck initially just has five defense cards, five attack cards, and like a couple of others that are doing some different stuff, like skill cards, I think they're called. And so it, like Into the Breach, you know what the other person, what the enemy is going to do the next turn. So you're kind of picking your cards to counter that stuff. So, you know, like if they're going to attack for, you know, X amount of damage, you could use your defense cards to build up your defense, and that gives you like a shield of X amount of points. So like if they're attacking for 8, you have 2 5 defense cards, you can play those two. That'll give you 10, and that'll, you know, nullify any attack you're going to get, essentially. Hmm. And for each turn, you can only cast cards totaling 3 points, but you have some that are 0 points, and you have some that are maybe 2 or 3 that are more powerful cards, but I also have some that in my deck that give me extra energy points for the next turn. So I've had one that gives me, it sacrifices all my current energy points for the turn. It's all 3. It gives me those 3 the next turn. So I have 6. And then I have cards that spawn shivs, which are 0 point attacks that do 4 damage. Then I have a card called Finisher, where for every attack card you play in a turn, it deals an extra 6 damage per attack. So you start layering all this stuff up, and you just do a fuck ton of damage on them. And to add to this, normally, after you play a turn, the rest of your cards get discarded into the discard pile. Then once you have you know, played all the cards you have, it just throws them back into the regular pile. I got an artifact that nullifies that, so I don't lose any cards. It doesn't discard any cards. So mine just keeps filling up like an Uno deck. There's a limit of like 12 cards, I think, at once you can hold. But it gets ridiculous on this run. So you start having this stuff all pile up in fun ways that kind of breaks it a little bit, but it's a fun kind of break. And it's just a really well-designed card game. And I think we're looking at a point where by the end of this year, I'm going to have 2 card battling games in my top 10. And I've never been a big fan of that genre before. Because like I played Hearthstone, I was like, this is just a bullshit game. It requires you either spend all of your free time on this game or spend a lot of money on it.
Yeah.
And it's like, that was not fun for me.
It's pretty much a money sink.
Yeah, and like I've even heard from like people that cover Hearthstone, like they get codes for, you know, the new expansions or whatever, and like they talk about like even getting the free stuff from Blizzard, like they can barely keep up, and it's like that's kind of fucked up design. It's just really kind of exploitative in a way that free to play games should be, especially stuff like that where it's all about the cards in a way, which these games don't really have that issue because it's, you know, all built in, and it's a really fun because you kind of have more control over things and you build up your deck. Like my first run, which was at the beginning of the stream, was on the first character, and I fucked up on the boss because I had a card that would spawn an extra copy of it in your deck, and so that drowned out. So I didn't have any easy way to get to my defense cards. So I just kept getting attacks from the boss and killed at a certain point where I just killed myself because I was stupidly using this card over and over again. Just running a bunch of copies of it. So the second run went a lot better. I'm still working on that run. But yeah, that game is a lot of fun. And that's been kind of it. I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to stream tomorrow. It might be more Minecraft once I get this this whole underwater lair built up. But I might try something else, but I'll figure it out. But that's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
Yeah, well, as for me, anyway, yeah, I'm dealing with a cockatoo at the moment because we got a new member of the family that joined us today. Little puppy, his name's Brody. He's a Sheltie, like Toby was, and he basically looks like a living teddy bear. He really does. Can you hear him?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's him. But yeah, he's adorable. He's precocious. He's untimid to like the extreme degree.
He's a puppy.
Oh yeah, very playful. He's got sharp little teeth too. anyway, so my primary gaming for this week has still been Dragon Quest XI. I thought I was actually getting to the end of the game. And then
That's a dangerous thing to think with Dragon Quest.
Yeah, and then they decided to pull the Final Fantasy VI route and destroy the world.
Yo, joy.
And now the game is going from place to place and bringing the light back. So, there's that. Still a lot of fun, still a good game, and it is still probably the best written Dragon Quest of the series. Some genuinely emotional and touching moments that you would not expect from this series. I guess Yuji Ori is either, you know, he's upgraded his scenario writing or he's gotten someone else to help him with it. But yeah, it's... God, it is a great game. And I absolutely understand now why the critics absolutely loved it when it came out. Because, yeah, it is genuinely a lot of fun. And Puff Puff. That's always a nice touch. But, yeah, so other than that, I have been reading the usual. I've about midway through my copy of Record of Lodoss Wars, The Grey Witch. It's a very, you know, you guys ever heard of that trope, Seinfeld is unfunny? Where it's like, you know, Seinfeld itself as a show was so groundbreaking and brought so many new things to the table that have all been so widely copied since then that if you go back and watch Seinfeld now, it seems kind of dull.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the issue with Record of Lodoss War, because this, you know, that series pretty much started the modern Japanese fantasy genre as we know it. You know, I mean, the books were literally based on a session of Sword World RPG.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, the books aren't boring at all, but it, by modern standards, it is very cliche. Because it's literally like, well, come on, I mean, you guys have seen Record of Lodoss Wars, the anime, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, it's your basic cliche Fellowship of Heroes.
Yeah.
You know, you got a warrior, you got a thief, you got a mage, a cleric. And then, you know, and then there's Deedlit.
Yeah.
Who is Deedlit?
Yeah. With the world's probably most impractical ears ever.
Yeah. How she went through that entire series and never got a single injury to those ears is still a mystery. Because I swear, there are parts where I'm like, can she even fit in the door without turning sideways?
Yep. Elves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and there's also the dwarf who doesn't get along with the elf. Because that is just...
Because, of course.
It's the most cliche of fantasy cliches.
Yeah.
But other than that, watch an anime. Finish the first season of Freezing, a.k.a. the anime where it's a bunch of giant-titted girls trying to kill each other. And then when they're not trying to kill each other, they're basically fighting angels from Evangelion. They're called Nova, but let's be honest, that's what they are.
They're not really fooling anybody.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, during a lot of those fights, the girls have their tops torn off and their boobs unceremoniously exposed.
Because Japan.
Yeah. I mean, technically, we couldn't have that excuse since, you know, the original writer and artists are Korean. But he specifically tailored that series and much of his manga work specifically for that. Though he didn't really have to do much, because I've read some of the work he did in the original Korean market, and not terribly dissimilar.
Yeah.
But yeah, and yeah, I already mentioned it. New dog.
Yep.
Got Brody. Oh yeah, summer is finally coming to Georgia now, and by God, it burns!
The giant ball of fire has been ignited again.
The big ball of gas is very close in the sky, and basically walking outside feels like you're walking into a sauna. It's going to get up to around 98 early next week.
Nice.
It's supposed to get up to around 94 Sunday. So that's wonderful. Yeah. So probably what's going to end up happening is that for the next few months, I'm going to be unceremoniously watching winter and Christmas stuff so I can remember what it felt like to be cold.
May not be a bad idea.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those summers. I mean, don't get me wrong, summers in the South are notoriously hot.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like something that you expect to come. There's a reason why when New Yorkers come down south, they can only stay a couple of days.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they die.
Yeah, it's just an unpleasant place to be.
Humid. Yeah.
It's humid. If it's not hot and humid, it's raining and storming.
Yeah, that was like the thing when I went to Disney World as a kid is like, Orlando. It was very unpleasant.
Yeah.
It was either incredibly hot and humid or it was raining.
Yeah.
We didn't always do a great job of sunscreening.
Yeah. Usually, my suggestion is if you're ever going to go down to Walt Disney World, go down there during autumn or winter.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it can still be somewhat humid, but it won't be nearly as hot.
And less people.
Yeah, and less people. Unless, you know, it's near Christmas.
Yeah.
Then there's a bunch of people. Other than that, I'd usually say something like early spring. Because once it starts getting into April.
Yeah, I guess spring break and all that stuff shows up. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, so that's pretty much been my week. So anything else before we move on?
Nope, I'm good.
Alrighty then. Well, I do believe it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And continuing the series that we've been doing for the last couple of weeks, I want to talk about yet another member of the Japanese science fiction master quartet. You'll note that I said quartet other than trio, because normally they say trio when involving stuff like these guys. But the person I'm talking about, I believe, belongs up there. And up until the 1980s, he was considered one of the big three until he was sort of unceremoniously replaced by Yasutaka Satsui. Of these four individuals, he's arguably the most prolific of all of them. He wrote pretty much in, although he's most famous for working in speculative fiction, he pretty much wrote in every single genre that existed at one time or another. He published at least 80 books during his lifetime, and I think there was like another 20 that came afterwards when he died. But the gentleman to be discussed is a gentleman by the name of Ryo Hanmura. Now, Ryo Hanmura originally started out his career as, you know, doing odd jobs. He was an advertising executive for a while. Then he also worked as a bartender for a cabaret. Basically in the early 60s, he just kind of unceremoniously drifted into writing because he was, you know, much as how a lot of the great writers in history, he got into it because he needed the money. You know, when, you know, the magazines were, you know, starving for material back then. And so he's like, okay, I'll go ahead and start writing for these folks. And he ended up publishing his first story called Harvest in the March 1963 issue of SF Magazine. Again, that is like the now these days considered the premier science fiction magazine in Japan. Only the big guns get published there these days. So overall his oeuvre is sort of like a lot of it, at least a good chunk of it, is very much like the material you get from someone like Yasutaka Satsui, except it's played completely straight instead of, you know, parodic or satirical. It's usually a lot of like paranoia type stuff, like secret history type stuff, like, for example, one of his most famous works is the Seiyun Award-winning, Blood Ties to a Stone, which is basically the story of a group of immortals, what you would call secret masters, who are like masters of the occult trying to find ways to keep and, you know, prolong their immortality. And it suggested that many of the folk tales of Japanese history involving vampires and werewolves are, in fact, these individuals. Also, immortality in this book is sexually transmitted because Japan. But the problem is that this immortality has a side effect. Because it's essentially a disease, and the end stage of this disease is it basically petrifies the host and basically turns them into crystal. Yeah, for those who don't know, diamonds and crystals are legit like one of the few things in the world that are nigh indestructible. So, you know, they succeeded in immortality, but just not how they thought it would be.
Not the most practical.
Yeah. Another work he wrote is called The Secret Chronicle of Mount Musubi, which is basically about a clan of espers, you know, psychics, telepathics, who appear as background figures at numerous key events in the history of Japan. So again, you're sort of seeing the idea here, right? Like I said, it's the secret history type thing.
Yeah.
You know, with putting in like these occultic and fantastical allusions to it. In fact, as far as that part of his oeuvre goes, his most famous work, his most famous and longest, is known as the Spirit Chronicles series, which he worked on off and on from 1975 to 1995. And basically that's about a race of disembodied aliens who possess a series of infamous individuals who've popped up during the history of Japan, you know, guys like Oda Nobunaga, Shiro Amakaza, you know, guys like that, basically leaving a lot of death and destruction in their wake. But they're possessed by disembodied aliens. See what you,
okay.
You see, you're getting the idea, right? Okay.
Yeah. Of course, that sounds like something I need to read, so.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, almost none of his work is available in English.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, he wrote in pretty much every genre that existed at the time. So, like, a very large amount of his work are, in fact, samurai genres. You know, basically mystery stories that take place during the Sengoku Jidai or the Edo period, usually involving samurai. He was also very heavily involved in what it's something that I don't think really exists anymore in Japan, something that used to be called the Barroom Anthology. Basically, these were inexpensive paperback books of various genres, usually specifically marketed as anthologies that could be read in bars, basically. They would have these like on barroom tables. And if you were just by yourself and you were getting a drink and you needed something to read, there he was. One of the most famous is a series called Club 88, which was basically a type of barroom anthology that contained many of his stories that were based around the genres of like romance, mysteries, tragedy, all of them usually involving characters around a Tokyo tavern. You know, stuff like that. Then, of course, he would occasionally, like, cross the genre. Like, for example, he had one book in 81 called Incident of the Murdered God in the Haunts of Wicked Men, which is basically a murder mystery dealing with psychic powers among Afghan rebels during the Soviet-Afghan War. And he also worked in the heroic fantasy genre. Most known as the Hyunjo Densetsu series. There's at least three of those that I know of. His most ambitious chronicle, his most ambitious work was a series called Taiyo no Sekai, or World of the Sun. He had originally projected this to be an 80-volume series of sword and sorcery novels taking place in the lost continent of Mu, which for those who don't know what Mu is like one of those supposed lost places like Atlantis or you know, stuff like that, Hyperborea, one of those sort of, you know, supposed places that existed supposedly in the Indian Ocean before anyone ever actually from Europe ever actually got there. And this was the last about 80 volumes. Unfortunately, he only managed to publish around 18 before he passed away. It's heavily suggested that he got the idea for doing this series because of another famous long-running fantasy series, his contemporary Kaoru Kurimoto, with the Gwyn Saga, which I think I may have mentioned one time or another on the show.
Yeah, he did.
That one ended up going for 130 volumes. But, he also wrote absurdist sci-fi stories. One of the only things of his that's ever been translated into English is a short story for an anthology from 1989 called The Best Japanese Science Fiction Stories. It's called Cardboard Box, and it's basically the autobiography of a cardboard box from being created into a factory through its lifetime as a receptacle for various items, and then eventually it's unceremoniously blown into a lake where it disintegrates and basically ascends and become and achieves nirvana because it's finally completely full.
Okay.
Yeah. He also wrote, of course, for television as well as a screenwriter. He wrote scripts for some of the early 60s anime for science fiction like 8-Man. Anybody ever heard of 8-Man? That's a very big early one. That one came out around the time Astro Boy did. And another series he did called – another series he wrote for – why am I not surprised? Super Jetter, which I don't know if you guys know that. I mentioned about the last other two. They also wrote for this series. I don't know why or how all of these guys somehow managed to find their way to – that one series, but they did. I don't know. But although he will not very little of his work has ever been translated to English, which is very sad because the man was obviously extremely popular. In fact, in Japan, the one book he's probably remembered more than anything else is a time slip book that he wrote in the, I think it was either the 1974, called the Civil War Self-Defense Force. And it's basically about a group of SDF, a platoon of SDF, you know, Japanese Self-Defense Force soldiers who get thrown back in time into the Sengoku Jidai period. With all of their weapons intact.
Yeah, that's probably not going to go well.
It ended up inspiring a very popular movie in 1981 called Sengoku Jidai. And it ended up getting a manga adaptation by Go Nagai, the gentleman behind Mazinger Z, Cutie Honey, Devil Man, that guy. But although his work is virtually impossible to read unless you know Japanese, he will always hold a special place in my heart, and soon, very soon, he will hold a special place in you, in yours, especially if you're like us, because there's one minor work that he wrote back in the early 70s that inspired something that has been a part of all of our lives. It was actually one of, I believe it was like of five books that he released in that year. Little book that came out all the way back in 1971. That book was called, are you ready for this? Hold on, I gotta get the name because I want to do this properly. Eiu Densetsu, a.k.a. The Legend of Heroes.
There we go.
And of course, back in the early 80s, a group of just starting out game programmers decided to use it to start a series called Dragon Slayer, Legend of Heroes, which would eventually branch off into the Trails series. Now you know who to thank for it.
Nice.
And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Bringing it full circle.
Yeah, and now we know one of the original sources for probably our favorite JRPG series.
Yeah, it's up there.
Yeah. All right. It is now time to get on to the proper show. The show proper, that is. As always, we have to talk about the asshole of the week. And this week, it's Trump and the Pentagon. Because I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news lately, but they are really gunning for war in the Middle East, specifically Iran.
Yeah, it's like every 10 years, this is a thing Republicans want to do.
For some reason, I wonder why.
Yeah.
Money.
So we had that paper. Bush in the 90s, Bush in the 2000s.
Yeah, that never got off the ground, but...
Yeah.
I think President Obama basically spent his entire two terms trying to make up for what Bush Jr. did towards Iran. If you haven't noticed, they're getting out the old playbook, and if you know what to look for, it's very obvious what they're doing.
And we don't have a 9/11 to give cover for this stuff time around.
No.
And, they're out now and they are getting ready to, they're already, mark my words, within the next couple weeks, you're probably going to hear about reports about something that the Iranians did. Maybe they fired on an American ship or, even worse, a Saudi ship.
Yeah, you never know them not talking shit about the Saudis and the shit they do.
Yeah. Saudi Arabia and Iran, of course, do not like each other. And there's a very good reason for that. It's because the Saudis are primarily Sunni Muslims, and the Iranians are Shia Muslims. Also, of course, the most holy site in Islam is within Saudi Arabia's borders.
Hmm.
Yeah, they got two of the most holy sites for Muslims:
Mecca and Medina.
Hmm.
Yep.
So
the great irony of the Muslim religion is that two of them are owned by some evil people.
evil bastards. Hmm. But so Pentagon is going to brief Trump on plans for troops in Middle East.
I think they've already said they're going to be sending like about 1,500 over there.
Mm-hmm.
Shocking.
But the numbers could go up into the tens of thousands.
Yeah. And they're already saying, it's like, no, we're not doing on the ground. We're going to do it completely drone-based. It's going to be a short little war. We'll be out of there by Christmas.
We've heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard it. We know it's bullshit.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. We all remember this bullshit. We all remember this game. And we aren't going to fucking fall for it again.
Trump really wants to do the mission accomplished thing.
Yeah, he wants something really bad to...
He wants to accomplish something.
He wants to have something he can... a feather he can pin to the cap of his presidency.
No.
Something that he can say. It's like, look, I did this.
Completely ruining America. Well, that's a pretty big accomplishment.
Yeah, but he wants the world.
Yeah, and, pretty much.
And Trump Towers are not enough for him.
No. If he could get his name carved onto the moon like that one episode of The Tick, he totally will.
Yeah, you heard him talk about how George Washington was stupid, how he didn't name anything after him. It's like,
yeah, he did that because
he didn't want to be idolized as much as people did. Wanted to idolize him.
Hmm.
But also he was generally a pretty good man, and people named stuff after him in honor of him.
Yeah.
Well, they kind of started naming stuff after Washington because, they wanted to name stuff after Washington because he was a good unifying figure for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was the one guy that, early in America's history, it was basically 13 colonies who could barely stand each other.
Yeah.
And the only reason they mostly got together was their mutual hatred of the British.
Yeah.
And the sort of idea of like an American nation really didn't take root until later on in the war when he had new generations of people like, Alexander Hamilton.
Hmm.
Coming about and sort of the camaraderie between all the different members of the Continental Army, even though they all came from different colonies.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is that after a while it kind of turned into a serious cult of personality.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong. Obviously during his lifetime, Washington was very, specific about his image and 'cause he knew the effect it had, but he also wasn't so bad at self-aggrandizing that he'd build like a statue of him as Zeus enthroned, which exists, by the way,
yeah.
Or him ascending to heaven, with an apotheosis, which, by the way, if you go into the Capitol building and look up at the rotunda, there's a giant painting under the dome called the Apotheosis of George Washington, where he's enthroned in heaven with the angels. That exists.
When people wanted him to like keep being president, he declined that.
Yeah,
like no, it was not a great idea to just essentially become a new king.
Trump would like to be king.
Yeah. But anyway, we're gonna see how that turns out.
You get a sense that there's a general sense of desperation over there in the White House right now. Like their time is running out.
A little bit.
I have no idea why. You don't know. They're going to get their hands on his finances and his tax returns any day now.
Yeah.
One way or another.
Uh-huh. And, I mean, the courts have already said, no, you can't block it.
Mm.
You're going to have to come and give them to them.
Yep.
Anyway, now to wash that taste out of our mouth, we have our heroes of the week. And our hero of this week is a federal judge who this week, literally just earlier today, blocked the controversial abortion law in Mississippi.
Yep.
Yep. That one has been... that was passed a good while ago, but essentially blocked abortions after 6 weeks, which is around the time where women start noticing.
All right.
That something is different. Hmm. And, yeah, so issued a preliminary injunction saying the law, quote, threatens immediate harm to women's rights, especially considering most women do not seek abortion services until after 6 weeks. Allowing the law to take effect would force the clinic to stop providing most abortion care. By banning abortions after the detection of a fetal heartbeat, the law prevents a woman's free choice, which is central to personal dignity and autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
I love the wording of that because it attacks both the letter and the spirit of the bill.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. The party that tries to position themselves as championing, you know, personal rights.
Yeah.
Very much is against personal rights.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's personal rights as long as it doesn't get in the way of God.
Mm-hmm.
G-A-W apostrophe D.
And I expect to see more stuff like this happen in the coming weeks.
Mm. Yeah. You just have to wait for the ACLU to draft their lawsuits and all that.
Yep. Yeah.
I think the one for Georgia just went in.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So yes, that's going to be going on probably in the next couple weeks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, then, now we start the proper show proper. And first story we got to the night, a Republican from Michigan has publicly admitted that he thinks that Trump engaged in impeachable conduct. This is Justin Amash.
Yep. One of the House reps who basically just tweeted out at a pretty good thread sort of going over this.
Yeah. He didn't just tweet out one thing. He basically tweeted out his whole reasoning.
Yeah, it basically starts off like, here are my principal conclusions after reading the Mueller reports. One, Attorney General Barr has deliberately misrepresented Mueller's report.
Mm-hmm.
Two, President Trump is engaged in impeachable conduct. Three, partisanship has eroded our system of checks and balances. And four, few members of Congress have read the report.
Mm-hmm.
I offer these conclusions only after having read Mueller's redacted report carefully and completely, having read or watched pertinent statements and testimony, and having discussed this matter with my staff, who thoroughly reviewed materials and provided me with further analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And comparing Barr's principal conclusions, congressional testimony, and other statements to Mueller's report, it's clear that Barr intended to mislead the public about Special Counsel Robert Mueller's analysis and findings. Mm-hmm. Barr's misrepresentations are significant but often subtle, frequently taking the form of sleight-of-hand qualifications or logical fallacies, which he hopes people will not notice.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of keeps going. It's definitely a good read to go through.
Mm-hmm.
It's linked to in this article.
Yeah, this seems like a GOP rep was like actually doing his job.
Yeah.
Well, he's a member of what's called the Freedom Caucus, which is like the group that like Rand Paul and such are part of, which means he's occasionally a good stopped clock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whereas Rand Paul is apparently all over Trump and completely cool with what he's doing.
Yeah, he's definitely voted for Trump's stuff over the years. Last couple of years, but yeah, it definitely doesn't hurt to have people that are actually thinking beyond Trump.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not just being like, well, he's our party, our future and present and future, all this stuff. It's like, no, if you guys aren't stupid, you know, you can prevent this from taking down the party.
Mm. He's barely their present.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely not their future.
No.
No, because if, you know, in 5 years, he's going to be 75. He makes it that long.
Yeah. But, yeah, so we'll see what that comes from. Mm. Now even more awful Trump shit. Trump is looking to pardon some war criminals on Memorial Day.
Oh, that's a good way to honor our troops.
And I don't mean that rhetorically. I mean these people actually committed some awful, awful shit and were convicted of it.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about, like, you know, getting out of ranks or anything. We're talking about a dude who shot a little girl for fun.
Hmm.
Yeah. It takes a lot to get convicted of war crimes by the military.
Yeah.
They are very much into doing their due diligence, and if they can, they don't.
Mm.
So mm-hmm. these people actually being convicted says a lot.
Yeah.
About the bad things they've done. And yeah, trying to actually do this is already bad enough, but
mm-hmm.
We'll have to wait until Monday to see if he actually does it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I imagine lots of people in the military, there's lots of good people in there.
Mm.
They will be pissed that the notion of saying this stuff is okay. And this is, you know, he's run on, you know, being supportive of torture
mm-hmm.
as a thing that he wants troops to do. And it's like, no, we should definitely not be doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so... And, of course, for those you don't already know, apparently Trump is trying to make the July 4th celebrations all about him.
Oh, yeah, that's what it's all about.
Hasn't he actually tried to do that every year since he's been in office?
Yeah, and
he wants to have a big parade in his honor.
Yeah, he wants a big military parade, like, you know, European or French style, with, like, all the tanks and stuff out.
It's like, anyway, Fourth of July is already about the troops. Like, stop making it about yourself.
Yeah.
All right. Next story. The Justice Department has put out their list of charges against Julian Assange.
Mm-hmm.
One of them includes espionage.
Mm-hmm.
It very much is a potential attack on the press.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because the things they did as far as they received sensitive materials. Reported on him. You know, whatever you think about Julian Assange being an asshole in his own right.
Mm-hmm.
This is the sort of thing where, you know, good journalists in this country, you know, write about this stuff and get this sort of materials from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that helped take down Nixon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Some of this sort of stuff. And, like they say in the story, that they've only... tried the espionage charge once before, and that was
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the example is. Let me see if I can find it here. But yeah, the Justice Department has long tried to maintain that journalists can be charged with espionage if they steal secret information, but they generally don't.
Yeah.
It's leaked out to them. And this seems like they're going to try and, you know, go back on that stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, which sets a very bad precedent, even if you
hate
Assange as a person, and I think most of us are, you know, in the he's kind of a dick category.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the cases where you kind of have to defend him because the principle behind it. Even though he might have actually turned into a complete jerk off who's basically just putting people's lives in danger, there actually was a point when he wasn't doing that. And he should be defended for that at least.
Yeah.
Because it sets a bad precedent for anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's very much
par for the course for this administration, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the things people worried about when the U.S. got him extradited over here.
Yep. Yeah, so we're going to see how that plays out. Next up, former White House counsel Donald McGahn, or just Don McGahn, was subpoenaed by Congress to appear, and he has defied it.
Yep.
That's not a good look.
No, it can get him arrested.
Bad optics.
Yeah, he's already being held in contempt of court. I think they're going to be going through the legal process to try and get him forced to appease this subpoena.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he was definitely in the White House when Trump was there, and no shit.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it's just a witch hunt, and this administration has done nothing wrong at all.
Yeah, I know they've sort of continued their subpoena stuff. They got someone out to Hope Hicks and one of the aides for Magan. So they're going to be, saying, hey, if you're not going to play ball with us, we'll just keep working.
Yeah.
Our way through the rest of the staff there.
Yeah.
All of this just makes you feel dirty, doesn't it?
It does.
It's just... like if there wasn't anything to hide, these people are playing the stupidest card possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Phil, you might want to, write to your premier.
Mm-hmm.
Your prime minister, Mr. Trudeau. Just in case he needs to let in some American refugees.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was going to say invade, but...
Well, yeah, I was also going to... Yeah, I'd be cool with Canada invading us right about now. Please?
Yeah. Well, that's a little bit...
Canada will never invade us. They're too nice.
Yeah.
I
mean, we might come down and give you Tim Hortons, but that's about it.
Yeah. Tim Hortons, or what is it? That place that gives out beaver tails.
Yeah.
But anyway. Next up. So everybody knows that the House is trying to get a hold.
I'm sure some of them.
Yeah, a hold of Trump's financial records.
Mm-hmm.
We already now know from the tax returns from like the 80s to like mid 2000, he basically lost so much money that like I think it was like 1%, 1-5% of all the money that was lost in that time period was actually him.
that's an accomplishment.
That's something to be known for.
Yeah. Well, he's appealed this again, and now it comes time for some sweet, sweet revenge because the subpoena, the appeal to it, is going to the court of – are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Judge Merrick Garland.
Oh, why is he noteworthy?
Oh, he was a perfectly qualified member of the Supreme Court who was nominated by President Obama and never got his day because Mitch McConnell and the Republican Congress did everything they possibly could to block it.
They turtled it.
Oh,
yep.
Dear.
And yeah, so he never got a proper hearing.
Oh.
Like at the very least.
This is so delicious it has to be fattening.
Yeah.
This is some full fat irony right here.
Yeah.
And so he's going to make the ultimate decision whether they're going to be forced to have to allow this stuff to get sent to the Democrats?
I'm going to say yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just don't know. Yeah. Don't know why. I just got this feeling.
Yeah. Judge Garland, let all of your worst, just absolute worst feelings of vengeance out in this one deed.
Yeah, so unfortunately the appeals are heard by panels of three judges.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's not necessarily a guarantee that Merrick Garland is going to be the specific one that's going to be on this case, but there's still some irony in this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The guy who was denied a hearing and left the seats empty for a record amount of time in this country's history.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be sweet.
Because
if there is anything we know by now, there is something in those records he really does not want anyone to see.
Yeah. He's fighting it so damn hard. It's that in itself.
He didn't even, he didn't even fight the Russia investigation this hard.
Yeah.
And remember, that one pretty much showed that there wasn't actual like any actual real collusion between the two.
Because
and he still acted all suspicious as hell.
Yeah. But anyway.
So something's there, and I can.
Yeah.
Next up, Dr. Ben Carson. Some of you may know that he's the head of Housing and Urban Development.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about Oreos.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't think we got it listed on here, but we might as well bring it up.
It's relevant.
Yeah. So he was in a hearing, and he was asked all of these questions that are specific to his department, like an REO and you know, housing rates, stuff like that. Stuff that, you know, if you were actually, qualified to run the Housing and Urban Development, you'd know about.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know a goddamn thing.
Yeah.
And they're talking about REO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which he's like, Oreos?
Yeah. It's like, dude, you're the head of this department. You should know basic terms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's people that are supposed to be qualified would know about financing housing and all that.
Yeah. But unfortunately, he still is the head of that department, and it shows because he's introduced a new rule that's going to allow homeless shelters to block transgender people.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
That makes sense somehow.
Well, he's a doctor. He knows all about transgender people.
He's a neurosurgeon, and here's something I found out recently. Apparently, as like the group of surgeons is concerned, apparently neurosurgeons are considered the dimmest bull in the lot.
Really?
Yeah, because apparently most neurosurgery is very much guesswork, because a lot of the brain isn't actually completely mapped out.
Yeah.
So he's kind of just gotten lucky this whole time.
Somehow he's even
as lucky as he may have gotten, how many people has he crippled?
Mm.
Yeah. But, yeah. So, you know, there's just a degree of wanton cruelty that this administration has that I don't think anyone like even Andrew Jackson or Woodrow Wilson can equal.
No.
Like, it's not just wanton cruelty, it's wanton vindictive cruelty.
Mm.
It's just so childish.
Done to a man. I want to say John Oliver said he's done interviews with him, or essentially he would just say or do whatever he asked him to. And it's like one of those things, like he's kind of that much of a puppet that he could just get him to do whatever. I'm trying to see if I can find this. I guess one of the a clip on recent shows.
Yeah, but anyway, now we got some good news for you. So for those of you who don't know, here in my home state of Georgia, our so-called quote-unquote governor, Brian Kemp, recently signed into law one of the most strict anti-abortion laws in the country. Mm-hmm. I say one of because, of course, Alabama managed to one-up them. but also remember that this particular Georgia law also has it where you will be prosecuted if you try to get an abortion out of state.
Mm.
Well, the good people are actually reacting now because the DAs across Metro Atlanta this week have officially vowed to not prosecute women for abortions.
Mm. Yeah, that's some civil disobedience right there.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, you passed the law, well, fuck you. We're not enforcing it.
Nope. And I'm once again confident that all of this is going to go to the Supreme Court and it will be struck down.
Yeah.
Even if, you know, if Kavanaugh is a justice now.
Hmm.
I do not see it happening.
He might even be the swing vote.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was about to say. It's like, can you imagine the shitstorm that would come up if Kavanaugh was the deciding vote on that?
Yeah, and he ends up siding in favor of pro-choice.
Yeah,
that will be like literally the entire sort of foundation, which a good chunk of the religious right has built itself on, will collapse overnight.
Hmm.
Like you will see just all of these some of the most infamous organizations in the religious right. You know, the freaking Right to Life, American Family Association, Family Wreath. All these places will just straight up collapse underneath themselves, because that'll literally be the end of that whole thing right there.
Yeah.
Like that, they will no longer be able to get any money. You know, there's a reason why, you know, nobody tries to challenge, you know, gay marriage in the U.S. anymore.
Yeah.
There's no money in it.
Yeah.
No. They've either had to outsource it to, like, Africa, or they've had to, like, switch over to, like, quote-unquote religious freedom bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably what's going to end up happening with the abortion thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking again with the abortion stuff, Missouri this week recently joined that group of infamous states where it instituted a new law banning an abortion after 8 weeks.
Yep, and there are not exceptions for rape or incest.
Nope.
They do make an exception for medical emergencies, such as when there is a risk to a death or permanent physical injuries to, quote, a major bodily function of the pregnant woman.
All of these are going to end up being challenged.
Yeah. And they're all probably going to go down in one fell swoop, too.
Yeah.
So, because I have a feeling that it's either going to be the Georgia one or the Alabama one that's going to reach it to the Supreme Court first.
Yeah.
And then we get to watch the fireworks.
Yep.
That's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah.
But next up, some more good political news over from the UK. Theresa May has announced that she is stepping down on June 7th.
Yep, I saw a good joke. June is the end of May.
And she will probably go down as probably one of the most hated PMs next to likes of freaking, I don't know, what was the guy that was prime minister during the potato famine in Ireland. I'm trying to remember what his name. Trevelyan, I think, was his name.
Yeah.
Or of course Thatcher, who was so hated that the day she died, it was announced she died, there was a enormous street party in Glasgow that lasted the entire night.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's a famous clip of when the BBC went out to Scotland to ask what people thought about Thatcher's dying, and there was this old Scottish woman. She's like, "Oh, not a bit of good. Not a bit of good. She drive a stake through her heart, make sure she doesn't come back." Yeah.
I love Scottish
that
people.
That was my Scottish accent.
Mm.
Did I do good?
Yeah, not bad.
So it seems like, you know who looks like to be the favorite to succeed her?
Boris Johnson.
Uh-oh.
Yep.
Mm.
Jeremy Corbyn.
Nope.
No.
Boris
Johnson.
Who? Oh, Boris. Frickin' Boris Johnson.
The adult
AKA
bam
the Trump of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
AKA adult
There's even
bam
a resemblance.
He even has the terrible hair.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. That is going to be such a fucking circus.
Like guy who's even ended like interviews by just biking away.
Yep. Yeah. Well. All right. Next up in news, thanks to the anti-vaxxers, there are nearly half of the states in the United States have had a measles case so far. So far, the CDC has reported 880 cases.
Yep, and it is 24 states have had some case or more. Oklahoma's the latest one to join. New York has the most, which is 700 cases.
God damn it.
Which kind of makes sense. It's very much a hubbub of different people there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most populous states, but yeah.
There's a couple and the thing is, in New York, the anti-vaxxer crowd is actually fairly diverse,
because
you also have, like, the hardcore Orthodox Jewish community
yeah
in that one part of New York, one of their most famous rabbis is an anti-vaxxer.
Hmm.
So, yeah, it's just...
There's some places, some states that are looking to put in actual limits for reasons that parents can not vaccinate their children legally. Mm-hmm. Connecticut, Maine are two of those. Washington's governor just signed a law to prevent parents from being able to get their children into daycare without the measles, mumps, or rubella vaccine, mm-hmm. as far as claiming personal or philosophical objections to it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's. I think there are potentially going to be rules put into place as far as letting these people fly.
Yeah.
Because they're a dangerous across the country and the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, like every couple of decades, you know, there's stuff that comes back. Like, I'm okay with shoulder pads coming back. I'm okay with ripped jeans. Not so okay with measles. Seriously. Don't really have any nostalgia for measles.
No.
Hmm.
Well, there's a reason why we have vaccines to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I swear that there is a cult of stupidity in this country. That... Yeah.
Oh, you can look at one person at the top of it.
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, all right. Next up. Let's see. From Washington. Washington is now the first state that allows composting of human bodies.
Yeah, it's sort of an alternate means of dealing with somebody's passed away as far as, like, instead of cremating them or...
burying them, both of which can be profoundly expensive,
yes.
I know from experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's sort of an ecological like improvement on that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, they can. I think it says about a month it takes for this whole process,
mm-hmm.
And then essentially they become natural organic reduction is what they call mm-hmm. the process. Mixed with substances such as wood chips and straw into about 2 wheelbarrows worth of soil in a span of several weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Loved ones allowed to keep the soil to use for what they need. So I could use them in garden or whatever, but yeah.
Mm.
That's an option, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's an option.
Yeah.
Next up. You guys have probably heard lately that, you know, it was recently decided that we were going to put Harriet Tubman on the head of the, on the face of the $20 bill.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin decided he's going to delay that into 2028.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to happen next year. It's when they're going to be issuing new bills.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, so this was going to coincide with the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, for some reason, they've delayed it.
Can't quite put my finger on it.
Yeah, that's strange why... that would happen.
Yeah. Because a certain someone is going to be up for election, for re-election.
Yeah.
Here. And the idea that this would happen on the on the year that he lost that election would just be too poetic, I guess.
Yeah.
But they're not.
Yeah, but anyway, in the meantime, there's a guy who's like 3D printing stamps where you can put Harriet Tubman on the face yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you could just use a good old fashioned marker to just put Harriet Tubman bitch on the 20s.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
But yeah, like obviously the president was one of the people was not a fan of this decision when they were talking about it a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Shocking.
Saying it was pure political correctness. Which, yeah. Like
also,
the money
it's
all
because
having
we're
like
one ourselves. Of the few countries in the industrialized world that doesn't change up its currency every few years because... Mm.
Yeah. That's not a pure design.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, it looks kind of like ass at this point compared to what other countries have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the recent Canadian, wasn't there recently, like up in Canada, they got the new Canadian, what was it, the new Canadian 20 or the new Canadian 10? It's like purplish and it's got a woman on the front and it's like it's got like all these graphics and stuff on it.
Yeah, and it's got
it
like
looks ultra modern.
Raised bumps on the back. Yeah, it's our money is kind of cool.
Well, if I remember correctly, doesn't like paper money in Canada, isn't it like not only different color but also like different size as well?
No, the bills are all the same size.
But they do have like braille bumps on them, don't they?
Yeah, although the braille bumps themselves, they're not actual characters. The number of the denomination of the bill is denoted by how many of those bumps there are on it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's better than nothing, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it's like a 5 will have one bump on it, 10 has 2, 20 has 3, and the 50 has 4, and the 100 has 5. So
yeah. Yeah. So you guys don't have like a $1, do you?
No, we have a $1 and $2 coins.
Ah.
The loonie and the toonie.
Yeah, we tried dollar coins. Didn't go well.
They're pretty rad.
Yeah. I've had some. Like, I'll go and get change, like, roll of change, and it would be in dollar coins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was in college, the snack machines actually dispensed them.
Yeah. They're pretty awesome.
Gee, America, that'd be a nice idea to take up again.
Yeah.
But we're so fucking stubborn.
Yeah, it's like, remember when the whole big deal of like, hey, there's color on our money now.
You're like what's up with that? Oh my god, there are colors on it now.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that makes it harder to...
You felt all fancy.
Counterfeit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like when you don't just make it green and white.
Mm-hmm. But anyway. Yeah, so, next up. The Clotilda. For those of you don't know, Clotilda is the last... slave ship to actually arrive in the U.S. before the international slave trade was actually banned in the United States. Well, that didn't actually end slavery in the United States, mind you. It just meant that the slave industry within the United States became purely intranational.
Hmm.
Well, it was recently discovered again, the wreck was. And it was found in the Alabama River. Of course it would be.
Of course it would be Alabama.
Fitting.
Yeah, it's... Let's see. Yeah, these are the people that came from what is now Benin, West Africa.
Yeah.
In Mobile River, near 12 Mile Island, just north of the Mobile Bay Delta.
Huh. Mobile,
Damn it, Alabama. I mean, I know it's not their fault because this happened like 100 years ago, but...
Yeah, but it, you know, that's been sitting there for a couple of hundred years festering, so...
Yeah.
You know what the town was that was founded near where these slaves would be brought?
No.
Africa Town.
Of course, we would call it.
Subtle.
Yeah. Just north of Mobile, founded by the Clotilda survivors after the Civil War.
Hmm.
Because there ain't no kind of racism like vindictive Alabama racism.
Yep. Yeah, fuck. Yeah, better news.
Well, next up. next up story. Some dumbass tried to dropkick Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I'm sure that went well.
And how did that go for him?
He, like, took a few steps forward. It's like, what the hell? Didn't even fall. And the guy promptly got taken down by one of his bodyguards.
Yep.
It's like, this is a 71-year-old man, even for as built as he is.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucked up. But apparently he has a history of
and
doing
the
this
only
shit.
The only reason that the guy didn't get his ass kicked completely is because the 71-year-old was in good was a good person because he could have done it.
Yeah.
Turned
He tweeted after this, said, I thought it was just jostled by the crowd, which happens a lot. I only realized when I was kicked... I was kicked when I saw the video, like all of you.
What was that?
Yeah, he turned around. It's like, okay. Basically said he's not pressing charges. Hopes this is a wake-up call for the guy, and he gets his life on the right track.
Yeah.
But I'm moving on, and I'd rather focus on the thousands of great athletes I met at Arnold Sports Africa, which is sort of where he was at here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, the he's in the next Terminator movie, so there's also that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way,
that Terminator,
sure that
dude
we'll
that tried to kick him is still going to be an asshole.
Yeah.
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 But anyway, so next up, NASA's getting ready to go back to the moon, and they've tapped 11 different companies for prototype landers.
Yeah, so there's 11 different companies here that's sort of doing various studies on different aspects of what they're working on, as well as producing prototypes, especially for different parts of the vehicle.
Mm.
They kind of list out all the different things they're doing here. Mm. So, like, Boeing's on here, which they're doing one descent element study, two descent element prototypes, one transfer vehicle study, one transfer vehicle prototype, one refueling element study, and one refueling element prototype. Might not be surprised that SpaceX is on here for one descent element study. That's it. Like Northrop Grumman is on here. They're doing one descent element study, four descent element prototypes, refueling element study and prototypes, Lockheed Martin. Yeah, a lot of companies in the works on this stuff. Like I said, they're going to put the first woman on the moon. Mm-hmm. Is their plans. Mm-hmm. They're hoping to, let's see, do this by 2024, landing on the moon's south pole.
Mm-hmm.
See, that seems doable, apart from the fact that they're splitting the job up so much that I don't think it's going to be very efficiently done. So there will probably be delays.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they have.
They said the total award amount for all the companies is $45.5 million.
Yeah.
All the companies. Let's see. Companies are required to contribute at least 20% of the total project cost, and it'll reduce cost to taxpayers, encourage early private investments in the lunar economy.
Yeah, which doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, but they're looking to establish sustainable emissions by 2028.
Yeah.
So to be able to keep doing this.
Keep your eye on Ryugu.
Because
I think that's where we need to end up.
All right. Yeah, can't wait to see where this goes, because it's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Next up. So last week we talked about that episode of Arthur.
Uh-huh.
Where it found where Mr. Ratburn finally got married.
Yep.
Unsurprisingly to another man, because I mean, if you haven't been paying attention this whole time, it's so obvious. It's yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it should really be everyone's first affirmation of their gaydar.
Yeah.
Yeah. But a certain state's public television refused to air that episode. Can you take a wild guess what it was?
I'm guessing it starts with A and ends with A.
I'm going to give you three chances, and the last two don't count.
Alaska.
You fail. Nope, it's Alabama again. You know what? This should just be called Fuck Alabama episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the, let's see, there's a quote here. PBS has sent a message to stations in mid-April alerting them to, quote, possibly, alerting them, quote, to possibly, to possible viewer concerns about the content of the program. And after Mike McKenzie, director of programming at the Alabama Public Television, viewed the episode, they decided not to broadcast it and showed a rerun instead. They have no plans to air it. Let's see. The quote, parents have trusted Alabama Public Television for more than 50 years to provide children's programs that entertain, educate, and inspire. More importantly, although we strongly encourage parents to watch television with their children and talk about what they learned afterwards, parents trust that their children can watch APT without their supervision. We also know that children who are younger than the target audience for Arthur also watch the program. The vast majority of parents will not have heard about the content, whether they agree with it or not. Because of this, we felt it would be a violation of trust to broadcast this episode.
Yeah, that's a load of horseshit.
Kinda yep. is.
God damn it, Alabama.
But did, well, if they legitimately got actual viewer concerns about that, then because they're a public television station, they kind of have to take that seriously.
Yeah, that is true, except...
But it's Alabama, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway. All right. So, next up. Stranger Things is having its season 3 coming soon.
It's three.
And of course, everybody's going to be watching that. And so, because of course, Stranger Things takes place in the 80s.
90s now.
And, well, 90s now.
It's 80s.
Yeah, it's still 80s.
Summer of 85 is when the new season starts.
Yeah. And, you know, you watch Stranger Things, they absolutely cannot let you forget that it takes place in the 80s.
And certain companies decided, hey, let's celebrate what actually happened in 1985.
And damn near bankrupted us.
Oh, this is the best troll ever. And I'm going to
Coca-Cola Corporation is bringing back New Coke. Okay, actually... Let me rephrase that, because technically New Coke never actually went away.
Mm-hmm.
It mostly just migrated to foreign markets.
Yeah.
But, okay, so, quick story. In the mid-80s, Pepsi was kicking Coca-Cola's ass.
Yeah.
Pepsi had started their ad campaign where they had people do taste tests of Pepsi and Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like 9 out of every 10 people preferred the taste of Pepsi over Coke.
Yep.
And also, you know, they had the whole Pepsi generation ad thing going on, which was just a massive success.
Yeah, and they had Michael Jackson. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was huge.
Yeah. So, obviously, Coca-Cola was getting their ass whooped. So they decided, we're going to start a new brand of Coke, and we're going to try and copy Pepsi the best we absolutely can. Now, when you try Coca-Cola and Pepsi, what's the thing between Pepsi and Coca-Cola that makes Pepsi stand out as far as flavor is concerned?
Pepsi's sharper.
Pepsi is, Pepsi's a bit sweeter.
Yeah.
It's not quite as, I don't want to necessarily say bitter, but it's got that sharpness to it.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola has that Pepsi doesn't.
Hmm.
So they decided to copy Pepsi, and they came out with something called the New Coke. Now, what ended up happening was one of the worst advertising disasters that was so bad that they still talk about this in business schools. Because apparently it got around the idea that Coke was planning on replacing their classic formula with this Coke.
Mm.
For the record, they weren't.
No.
But people got the idea that that's what they were going to do.
When you call it New Coke.
Yeah. And so what happened, there was actually a organization started called the Old Cola Drinkers of America. Specifically holding like rallies and stuff where they dump New Coke down the drain and stuff.
Yeah.
They had like a letter writing and phone campaigns. And that's how basically it was such a massive shit show that Coke scrambled and they came out with what we now know as Coca-Cola Classic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually asked my mom about this once and she said she specifically remembered like back in 85, you know, this was before I was born. Back in 85, she would have, when she was going to the grocery stores, like, because she worked for the health department back then.
Yeah.
And her colleagues were telling us, like, look, when you go to, let's see, this was back in 85, so it was probably the Piggly Wiggly. Go there and make sure the stuff you're getting, the bottle, make sure what it says on there, make sure it doesn't have that little new thing in the corner, because it tastes like garbage.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Which actually wasn't true.
No, it actually doesn't taste that bad. It's It's just that when you compare it to like the old Coca-Cola, it's a lot sweeter and not quite as strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you got like a bad batch, it would kind of taste like if you left it out in the open for a few hours.
Yeah, it'll be kind of flat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's basically they're bringing back New Coke, which, like I said, never really went away.
Hmm. Yeah, but now like the pop market is kind of at a point where you have tons of variety of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where this could actually come back and do well enough, it's just something different.
Yeah.
That could just stick around. I could see.
Yeah.
You probably shouldn't keep the New Coke name alive, but no. I could see it being part of the product line.
Mm. It does hilariously mention New Coke was rebranded as Coke 2.
Yeah.
And they were getting rid of it.
Yeah. And that's what eventually made its way to places like, you know, Mexico and the Philippines. And
Here's places. A sequel to Coke.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's actually really popular in those places, too. Mm. So
maybe we can bring back Crystal Pepsi at the same time. That'd be pretty cool.
They did
that a couple of years ago.
Oh, really?
I was toward the end of my Walmart run. I was grabbing a couple bottles for my lunch breaks and stuff.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah,
liked it.
They also brought back Surge for a while too.
Oh God,
Surge is still a thing.
Yeah, Surge is still around.
You can get it on Amazon.
You just have to order it online.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Amazon, I can get Crystal Pepsi on there.
Yeah. All right.
$10.99.
I mean Surge. Amazon has Crystal Pepsi too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice.
I don't know what single bottle for $11.
That's a bit much.
No.
I wouldn't even pay that much for Mexican Coke. And Mexican
four
Coke
pack for $26.
Nope.
Yeah. It's a little better, but not.
Nope.
No. See, I wouldn't pay that much even for like a six pack of Mexican Coke.
Yeah.
And Mexican Coke is already pretty expensive compared to the stuff you get in the U.S.
The 12 cans, 16 ounce cans, $29 for 12.
Mm-hmm.
That's not too bad.
Still a bit much, but
for something you can't like easily get off the store shelf.
Yeah,
some places you can
if you're really getting it. Yeah, but
anyway,
I get Game Fuel. $19 for 12 cans.
No,
God, I
just no.
that whole industry cannot go down fast enough.
Let's see: 3 charged Cherry Burst, 3 charged Berry Blast. 3 charged Original Dew, 3 charged Tropical Strike.
Yeah. And I don't think they've made that in years, so that's probably expired by now. So
yeah, it's not good for drinking.
Anyways.
I don't know, this is shipped and sold by Amazon.com.
Yeah.
It should be current.
But anyways.
Anyway. All right. So next up, even though John Wick 3 is already now out in theaters, they've already put out the release date for John Wick 4. It's going to be May 21st, 2021.
Mm. I'm willing to bet he kills a lot of people in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think this one, he's just going to hang out with the dog.
That would be something.
Dog,
that's
the... Well, that just took a dark turn.
Well, it was.
I don't think the dog.
I mean, it was. That was
too.
The plot of the first
movie. I mean, hanging out with the dog now.
Oh
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because then he'd have to be dead. And, yeah.
Or the never mind.
Oh, no, he gets a new dog in too.
Oh, okay.
Oh right.
Yeah.
So he has a new dog. I don't think anything happened to it.
No.
Well, damn. He better protect that poor dog.
I don't know what happens in 3.
Reaper's got a mark on you, man.
I'll have to go watch 3 and see if the dog is still around.
Yeah.
So. All right. Next story. So, the live-action Akira movie. This thing's been in development hell for, what, like 10 years now? I mean, I think Leo DiCaprio was attached to it for a while.
Yeah, I think that's this current iteration.
Yeah. We now know when it's going to be released. May 14th, 2021.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, it's being directed by Taika Waititi, the guy who directed, what was it, Thor Ragnarok?
Yeah.
Yep.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Yep, Ragnarok was amazing. So
yeah. They're also doing the new what was that vampire show?
What We Do FX. In the Dark.
Hmm. Yeah. That's going on right now too.
Hmm. Yeah.
He's officially the director. The pick is produced by Leonardo DiCaprio's Appian Way, which recently got a text credit from California to work on this. Mm. And yeah, it's going to be the week before John Wick Chapter 4.
Mm. And you know that they kind of probably would have wanted to get it out in 2020, but yeah, they weren't able to do that.
No. Yeah. Unfortunately, but so, God, you know, considering the original film was already a really truncated version of the original manga, there ain't no telling what they're going to do with this movie.
No.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it, though.
It's
got the potential to be pretty damn good.
Because most people don't know, the original film is basically like only 2.5 of the original manga volumes. The whole manga goes for like 6 phone book size volumes.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear what Taika Waititi turned down to work on this?
What?
He stepped away. This was announced the other day as well. Stepped away from directing the Michael Jackson pet chimpanzee pick Bubbles.
I think that was probably a good choice.
Yeah. Doing anything Michael Jackson related right now is not the best publicity.
Hmm.
Oh, that's going to be a Netflix thing too.
Yeah.
Netflix stepped away from that as well.
It's like, nope.
It's going to be a stop-motion movie about Bubbles.
Yeah, let's not have that. Right now, anyway.
Especially if it's maybe kid-focused, I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, God. All right, so. Next up.
Yeah, go.
Next up, our penultimate story for the night. So, the trailer for the Sonic the Hedgehog movie came out, and it was
horrifying.
Widely lambasted by just about every area of the internet that could exist.
Mm-hmm. Now, were the furries against it?
Yes.
No, they despised it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's like, why doesn't he have gloves? Why is his hands all weird? And it looks like you took Sonic and stretched him out on the rack.
It's like Sonic's the...
Like, it looks like all of his bones are out of joint, you know?
Yeah. It just looks like good.
Looks like the result of a Sonic, a hedgehog fucking a human.
Yeah. And that's what the sequel to Sonic 06 would have been.
Thank you for being on the same page with me there,
Brandon. Yeah. But, so as you know, it got a lot of negative feedback, and then the director said, okay, we heard you. We're going to go back to the drawing board and redesign it. And then, of course, we thought about, man, if that's going to happen, that's going to be some serious crunch time for the animators. Well, they've officially delayed it to Valentine's Day 2020. So
that's a better, more reasonable thing to do, I think.
Yeah.
It's still going to be terrible. But it may be just going to be less terrible when it comes out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The hashtag he has for this tweet, Jeff Fowler, the director, is hashtag no VFX artists were harmed in the making of this movie.
That's a long hashtag.
Which is a long, yeah, it is. It's probably as many letters in that as the rest of his tweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm okay with this. I don't think the delay should really be that surprising. The kind of time constraint that they were going to be looking at was unreasonable for even a Warner Brothers to expect people to do. So
it gave some more time to hopefully make it a dumpster fire that the fans like.
Yeah,
in some ways.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway,
but And finally, last story for the night, we got a trailer for Terminator Dark Fate.
Yeah, this is the Cameron one, right?
Yeah, James Cameron is now actually back in the picture.
He's producing this.
Yep.
Tim Miller is the one directing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of Deadpool fame.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it's hard to really tell if it's going to be any good or not, but it looks more promising.
It's been said that this takes place after Terminator 2.
Yeah.
So, you know, 3 and 4, you can basically...
Yeah. Well, I think they probably would like to forget that 3 ever existed.
Yeah. So, and yes, Schwarzenegger is back in it, too.
Yeah.
I think, based on data mining Terminator is going to be one of the DLC characters for MK11.
That would not surprise me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but which Terminator?
Right. Probably
SV-800, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I got two new ones here, or at least two different versions.
Yeah.
Played by, wait, what is it? Mackenzie Davis, and I'm not sure what, Diego Boneta?
Hmm.
Not sure what the guy is in this. Hmm. They really highlight who the actors are playing the other Terminators. They're just like, hey, look, we got Sarah Connor and Arnold.
Yeah.
Aren't they cool?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to see this. I hope this is good.
Yeah.
It looks promising.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's got, let's see, it's going to be out November 1st.
2019?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
This year.
All right. I'm good with this.
That sounds good. I'm down.
Weird thing about the trailers, no John Connor, who in the lore is like the savior of humans, at least.
Mm-hmm.
He's like leading the resistance after the shit goes down.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, but if it's after Terminator 2, it would kind of be a fait accompli that he would still be around. So
yeah, but this trailer doesn't like...
Doesn't say it.
Where is he at?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so I believe we got a story, folks.
We do.
Yep.
So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, something you want to read, want us to read on the air, your crazy, insane political manifesto about the space Jews, you know, infecting your toothpaste, please don't send us those.
No.
I mean, okay, send them, but send them to me because I need something to laugh at. But otherwise, yeah,
send the link to your Tumblr.
Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, for everything else, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little bit of insanity at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator or anywhere where you can get podcasts like ours that can be downloaded and enjoyed through your ear mouths. I hope my voice tastes like chocolate. Anyway, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Analfo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Logie, good night, sleep tight. Good God, it burns.